Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
I heard Eddie Van Halen play Eruption when I was 12 years old, and it changed my life. As far as I was concerned, it was the coolest thing by far anyone had ever done with a guitar, and that made me want to pick up a guitar and do the same thing. But it was kind of a lonely road for a young black kid who wanted to play heavy metal or hard rock music. I mean, my guitar idols were white guys. The music they played was mostly accepted by white people, and not by people who looked like me. And when I went to big arena concerts to see bands like AC/DC, Iron Maiden, Motley Crue, I felt like I was the only black kid in the arena. And then these guys came along. Look in my eyes, what do you see? The Cult of Personality. When the all-black hard rock band Living Color released this song, The Cult of Personality, I had another epiphany that, hey, being black is very, very metal. But that's just my story. What about you? Are you a musician who's had a hard time finding musical role models? Someone who looks like you or shares your experiences? So we're going to talk about the importance of representation in music, and I'm going to take your calls this hour at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. I have two guests with me in studio to help with the conversation. I have Steph Alexander. He's a rapper and musician, also known as POS. Good morning, Steph.
Hey, good morning.
And we're also joined by Sam Stallman. She's the co-executive director of SheRock. SheRock, it's a nonprofit organization which holds rock band camps for girls and gender nonconforming people. Sam, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks, you guys. Hey, I'm going to start by, you heard a little bit of my origin story. Sam, what turned you on to music?
Yeah, I guess just growing up listening to rock and roll a lot in the house. Like every Saturday, we'd do household chores, and my parents would turn on rock music. And I just remember playing air guitar all the time. And when I was in fifth grade, I asked for either a guitar or a drum set, and the parents decided guitar was quieter. So that's what I got. And yeah, I was really lucky because when I first started taking guitar lessons, there was a woman guitar instructor in town. So I was able to kind of see myself in her, and that was really helpful for me.
And what kinds of bands were you listening to your folks playing around the house?
Just a lot of classic rock, like kind of what you were saying, AC/DC and Led Zeppelin and Queen. And then I went through a boy band phase in the early 90s because what girl of my age didn't? and then I really started getting into punk music in my middle school years.
Gotcha. Steph, what about you? What was your – tell me your superhero origin story.
Oh, man. I think I listened to like whatever rap my cousins listened to when I hung out with them and whatever like adult contemporary and like soul my mom listened to in the house. But I didn't find my own musical identity until getting into skateboarding. And then through skateboarding, I met people who would give me, like, great tapes of music. And I got into Black Flag, like, maybe first. I know my first few musical purchases were Michael Jackson is Dangerous and Black Flag Damaged. So, like, my first CD and my first tape.
Very eclectic.
Yeah. I think it was just, like, that perfect age, like, right around sixth grade. Where you're, you know, you like pop and you're into whatever you hear, and then you find something that like talks directly to you. And I think by the time I was done with seventh grade, I was already starting to look like what a punk rocker looks like. That was definitely like the way I chose to express for me is like, I, you know, had a mohawk and got nice. got all gnarly looking and kind of, it just came with like skate culture for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, there aren't tons of black people in rock and punk like you were saying, So for me, it was more like I can put on all the stuff and then, you know.
Yeah. Did you ever feel like you still didn't belong, though, even though you're into the culture, you had the clothes, you listened to the music? Did you still feel like you belonged at all?
Well, where I was living, it was mostly white people, and none of them were punks. So it was easier to feel like I didn't belong, but it was like by my own choice, you know, by skateboarding and looking super ridiculous with the clothes I had on and, you know, like becoming visually offensive instead of just the black guy.
Yeah.
So if I did end up going to shows, which I did, being in shows and going out and trying to be a part of the scene, didn't necessarily feel accepted, but didn't feel like it wasn't mine because I kind of, you know, put it on myself.
Yeah, yeah. Sam, as far as you said you took guitar lessons and your first guitar teacher was a woman, what kinds of, I guess, how did that kind of influence you, having a woman showing you how to play guitar and play the kind of music you wanted to play?
I think it just showed me that it was possible, just because there's hardly any women lead guitarists that know how to shred. And so just to be able to, like, see that it was possible and something that was attainable, and especially it was right there, like, I'm learning from this person, right?
It's a huge deal.
Yeah, it's a really big deal to have role models like that, especially because the music I was listening to a lot of skate punk, too. Mm-hmm. And as I was thinking about this last night, I just know, like, the one band I can think of was the Distillers.
Yeah.
Who had Brody Dale was their lead singer, and I was like, she's so cool. So just being able to have that one person to be like, okay, I can be like them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of giving you a pathway of, like, that's who I can follow.
What about trying to start? Did you start bands right away when you were that age? How did that go?
I tried.
Yeah.
I really wanted to be in an all-girl band. That was what was, like, really important to me. And I tried to convince a bunch of my friends to learn instruments, but it didn't work super well. So I was lucky enough to be able to go to the camp, actually, that the organization I work for puts on. And I was an attendee of camp and was able to meet some young girls my age and that had the same interests as me and didn't think I was a weirdo for putting on my punk rock clothes. And we were able to start a band when I was in high school.
Nice. And that's what I was wondering about, you know, because I'm of a little older generation. I'm 51 now. But when I was, like, going around in junior high and meeting other musicians to try to play in bands, I can't remember seeing any girls who, like, played guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, me and the other guys I was with, we're all knuckleheaded guy guitar players and we're pretty chauvinistic about it. It's like, girls pick up guitar. Oh, she can't rock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you ever get that sense that there were guys who would look at you with a guitar case and maybe looking down their nose at you?
Absolutely. I can't tell you, especially as a teenage girl, when we went into different venues, how many people just push us off and would think we were carrying our boyfriend's amps or, you know, are you girls doing open mic night? Or just the assumptions that come with being a woman musician are very similar to that and just very looked down upon. And so I always chose to use it as motivation, but I think it's easy to get, you know, bummed out about it.
I can definitely beat you up.
Yeah, yeah. Steph, what about you? I'm always curious about, I just remember I also grew up in pretty middle class neighborhood, South Minneapolis. There was, and actually, when I was in high school, we moved to a suburban area. And so, again, mostly white guys who were in the bands that, you know, I wound up playing with. But I also noticed there was a little pushback from some of my black peers who didn't quite understand why I'd want to play this music that white dudes played.
Yeah.
Did you ever experience any of that?
I got a lot of that. I got a lot of that for not just the music, but for, you know, the look. You know, if I started that kind of look pretty early, I think by the time I was in high school, I didn't really have too much concern about what everybody thought about what I looked like until I was bumping into people who were, like, really interested in fighting over it and really just, like, didn't, you know, when, I guess I've said this kind of thing before, but when I was in high school, there was no Pharrell or Tyler, the Creator, or like any of these other examples of what black people look like. So to a lot of the people I went to high school with, I was not only the only black person they saw regularly, but I was the only dude with a mohawk they saw regularly. And I think, there was a lot of pushback from black people, you know, aside from some like my family was real cool. I had a couple of like family friends, but I didn't not get kind of teased or made fun of until like maybe the end of high school. Mm-hmm. After high school, there started to be more examples in pop culture of black skaters or black rock guys.
Gotcha. Yeah. We've got a caller on the line who sounds like he has an interesting experience. Let's go to Randy in Forest Lake.
Yeah.
Randy, what's your experience, your musical background and experience?
Well, I saw I don't know who it was, but he was a white guy that came up from Iowa when I was 4 years old, and I saw him on stage doing rock and roll. And I said, I want a guitar in the worst way. And my parents said, no, you can't have a guitar. So they got me an accordion when I was six. And I kept begging for a guitar and begging for a guitar, and they finally got me a trumpet when I was eight.
Come on.
And I kept thinking, dang, I want to play guitar. And I never understood, but that trumpet, since very few people play it, paid for my way through college. I played in high school with it, and I've played in several bands throughout my whole life. I'm 68 now.
Yeah.
My genre was I heard B.B. King doing Thrill Is Gone when I was 17 in 1967, and
sure,
the blues grabbed me ever since. I'm pretty much a blues genre, but I just say it because, one, practice. My parents made me practice,
yeah,
and all the adults that I know out there, their parents, they're too kind to the kids. They got to say, you have to practice, or you won't know how to get good.
That's
and
true.
So many great musicians, they get good at things because they're always trying to get something that they know they shouldn't have.
Yeah.
Or that they're you know, someone doesn't want them to have it, or there's so many distractions. So I'd say practice, and know that if you don't get the instrument that you think you should have,
sure,
someday, decades later, you might find, oh, that's the gift. That's why I got the trumpet.
Randy, that's a good moral.
Play trumpet.
And by the way, did you ever pick up a guitar, or just stuck with trumpet?
Never.
No, all right.
I play with guitar players that are giants at I know that I would never have been a hundredth of how good they are.
Well, I tell you what, Randy, I thank you for the call because, you know, there are tons of guitar players out there anyway. So trumpet's a great way to go. It's a good, honest living. Sam, when you hear, I'm just curious about was it hard to convince your folks to get you a guitar? It sounded like they're pretty supportive, right?
They were pretty supportive. I was really lucky in that sense that I think I kind of just came out of the womb doing what I wanted to do, and they're pretty supportive of that.
Yeah.
But I know that there's a lot of people that aren't. I've met a lot of adult women that are picking up a rock instrument for the first time ever, and it's because as a kid they were, you know, told to play more quote-unquote feminine instruments. Yeah. Play the keyboard, play the flute, play, you know, this more whatever, because apparently instruments have been gendered, but
right,
yeah,
that's
like,
interesting.
I don't know what that's about, but yeah. So I was really lucky to have the experience of people being supportive of that.
Well, let's talk more about She Rock, and yeah, just some of the some more examples of the type of girls and women who come through the program, and are, it sounds like you're saying that there are adult women who have always wanted to be able to pursue this type of music and play an instrument, but just were not able to for whatever reason. Give me some examples of the types of women and girls who come through the program.
Yeah, so we've started with our girls program, which is for ages 8 through 18. It's for girls, trans, and non-binary youth. And so it's just a whole range of kids. I think now we're facing, like, trying to convince some kids to play rock band instruments. There's some pushback from that, and I think it's such a bummer because it can be really cool. But so just all sorts of kids who are just interested in writing their own songs and interested in trying a new instrument, and we really are all about just creating this supportive environment where people can make mistakes and can fail and just try it out. And after doing the youth program for a number of years, we kept getting adults saying, I wish you would have had this when I was a kid. I wish, you know, I could have done this. And so we're like, well, let's do it.
Yeah.
Get on that horse. Why don't you try it out? So it's been really, you know, I always thought the youth camp would be the most inspirational, which it is. I'm always in tears by the end of the week watching these kids grow and learn their instrument. But the adults are amazing because they're truly facing 40, 50 years of being told they couldn't do this thing.
Yeah.
And now they're finally doing it. And It's really amazing to watch.
And what kind of skill levels are we talking about? Are we talking anywhere from beginners to folks who are well-versed in their instruments?
Yeah, about half of the people that come through all of our programs have never touched their instrument before. Nice. So they're just brand new starting it off. And, you know, we just teach them to put on that distortion pedal and rock out.
Yeah.
Enjoy it.
Turn it up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like never this, you know, music store quiet playing. Sometimes you just got to turn it up.
You got to turn it up.
So let's talk a little bit about punk as well. Punk is one of those it's a genre I got into also in high school.
Sure.
Because when I was in high school, Ronald Reagan was president. Yeah. A lot of the young punks were like going, he's going to blow up the whole world, man. Everything's, you know.
That was an excellent wave of punk. It's like.
Yeah, that 80s punk was really fueled out of that fear of basically Armageddon and things going away forever.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, you know, of again, I'm kind of an old head in this regard, just some of the things that are fueling some of the younger punks these days, some of the younger punk bands.
I gotta tell you, I have no idea what's fueling the youngest punks right now.
Yeah.
But I know for me, like, I saw those 80s punks at the McDonald's, you know, in Uptown, riding the bus to daycare with my mom and looking out the bus window. Seeing Mohawk dudes getting dropped off at daycare, going home, seeing Mohawk dudes again. I always just thought they looked cool.
Yeah.
They're always the villain in the 80s movies. It'd be like a gang of guys with Mohawks and like studded jackets.
I think there was a Chips episode where the villains were actual punk rockers, and everybody I know is up in arms about that episode.
Yeah, it's always like, why? They're not bad guys just because they look crazy.
Yeah.
But, I think... Wait. I think I lost my train there.
That's okay. Well, hold on to that. If it comes back, you let me know. I'm going to get to a caller right now because I think we've got another caller who's got an interesting story to tell.
I love it.
Let's go to Shaw from Edina. Shaw, what's your contribution to our conversation today?
So, hello. Yeah. So I come from the UK, London, UK originally. I grew up with, you know, some of the punk music you talk about, you know, like Sex Pistols and The Clash and everything. And a lot of rock and roll. However, the direction I went was we were listening to a lot of American black music, like soul, funk, and jazz, you know, and it became a huge movement in London. You know, people were dancing and they were well into it, you know, even more so than here. So when I came to America many, many years ago, I was expecting, you know, I was looking to America as this is the place, this is where all the soul, funk, and jazz records come from. But I was a bit disappointed, especially in the Midwest, because everyone is top 40.
Yeah, or classic rock.
You know, very much radio oriented. And then when I started to DJ here, and I still DJ, you know, I was playing deep, deep soul funk, James Brown, and, you know, Sam Cooke and some of the Parliament, Earth, Wind & Fire records.
Right.
But most people didn't want it. They wanted what they can hear, like Prince, Madonna, you hear on the radio. So I just, you know, I was a little bit disappointed, but I'm still very thankful that I'm still here. And some of the clubs and lounges, more of the sort of speakeasy lounges, gave me the opportunity to play what I like to play.
Yeah. Well, Minneapolis has that kind of vibe. Shaw, thanks very much. And both of my guests here, we're familiar with local musicians and local venues. Do you get a sense of? I'm sure you've probably traveled to other cities and gotten a kind of sense of.
Yeah.
Their scenes as well.
There's nothing like this here, anywhere. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like Minneapolis anywhere. I think it's the right size and in the right place to where you have a little bit of everything and you have people who are dedicated and really, really care about every little tiny thing. So if you're Shaw and you're looking for, you know, deep soul and funk, I can tell you five people that are super into that and some little corner place in Northeast that you can go there and hear it all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, same thing with punk. I mean, I came up, most of my like musical development in this city was before I could get into clubs, going to shows in people's houses, going to shows in people's basements and like regular houses that always had shows. You can count on it every weekend, you know, and maybe I'm the only black kid in the place. Maybe there's maybe two or three women in the place. But you can count on a bunch of weirdos being in this house, you know? Like, and as I've grown and toured and gone all over the place, there's house shows everywhere. There's different scenes everywhere. But there's nothing like this city that, I mean, usually, okay, this is a good way to put it, I think. When a local artist that draws you know, 500 people in their city goes on tour and they bring 50 people, 50 people, 50 people, and they get home and they bring 200, 500 people out.
Yeah.
That's a huge jump from 50 to 500, but that's the kind of stuff that you get here. Yeah. You know? Do you get what I'm saying about
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where it's like the support of the people that want to watch the music, the amount of bands, the amount of cross-pollinization mm-hmm. bands that work with each other. And like, I made this project, and now I'm going to go hop on this project with these guys.
Yeah.
I'm in this band, but I'm always working with all these different things. I don't see that anywhere else the way that you see it here.
Yeah, sure, sure. Yeah. You know, let me we're talking about music so much, I want to play a little bit because I asked my guests if they had some particular bands and songs that they might want to talk about a little bit. We have a choice here from Sam. The opener by, is it Camp Cope?
Yeah.
All right. Let's play a little bit of that, and we'll talk about it after it's done. So Sam, tell me about this band. What turns you on about this band?
I love this band so much. they're an all-woman band. They're from Australia. And I just think that they're just so passionate about being women musicians and really standing up for the like underdogs in music. They're really outspoken about social justice issues. And this song just kind of goes on to talk about being a woman in the music scene, and the like perfect line is like, tell me again how there just aren't that many girls in the music scene, which is like such a cop-out that people use of like, well, there just aren't any girls, so how can I book them on the show?
Yeah.
Like, how can I get them to be in my band? There just aren't women playing music. And it's like, well, that's such a cop-out. Like, ask them, what resources do you have that you could be lending to people in your community? Like, if you're a musician, you have resources, you have knowledge, you have equipment, you might have a space. Like, how can you use that to make sure that the music being written and produced and created is by all types of people and not one kind of person? So,
and that reminds me, I want to also ask you a little bit more about the program, because on the She Rock website, you guys are also talking about providing basically classes, and you want to be inclusive of people who are non-gender conforming.
Mm-hmm.
And just tell me a little bit about why the organization has kind of taken that step.
Yeah. You know, I think we just want to be really inclusive and understanding that gender is such a multifaceted thing. It's not a binary. There's not two genders. There's a zillion genders. And so just trying to be really inclusive of all of that and being really aware and just trying to stay up to date with all the language changes and everything. I think the biggest thing is just that anyone who is not a cis man can face just sexism.
Yeah.
And so really making space for that.
Great. Well, I'm going to, in case you're just tuning in, my name's Brant Williams. I'm in for Carrie Miller. This hour, I'm talking with my guests about race and gender representation and identity in music. We're talking about the rules of rock for women and people of color being a bit rigid and confining. Welcome back to the show. Of course, that was Public Enemy and Anthrax doing Bring the Noise. That's a marriage of rap and metal that was another epiphany for me as a young black kid playing rock music and also a big rap fan, and seeing listening to having both of those artists come together and do this just kind of blew my mind. So I'm continuing our conversation today about race, gender, and identity in music with my guest, Steph Alexander, also known as POS. And I've got Sam Stallman with me. She's the co-executive director of She Rock. So, hey, Steph.
Yeah.
When rap and metal came together like that, I think it kind of blew some folks away in some regards. How did it hit you?
It hit me very cool. I think, okay, when it was Anthrax or like the Judgment Night soundtrack kind of era stuff where it was like, we are purposely finding bands and rappers and mixing them together for this project. That stuff was really cool, but it kind of was like a doorway, I feel like, to a lot of people to be like, oh, that was a cool project. Now I'm going to go do that all the time. And that wasn't me. I didn't get into that until later. I could always rap, but I didn't ever take rap seriously. I was way too into punk and hardcore and metal and, you know, trying to be a guitar virtuoso and trying to, like, do this stuff to take rapping too seriously. I didn't get into taking rap seriously until the guys in my band went to college and I had to, like, figure out something I could do by myself, you know?
Gotcha. And, you know, the other thing I thought was interesting about that marriage is it didn't seem like that big of a stretch to me to combine the two because they're both very, I mean, they've got that swagger. Both are very, you know, male-oriented and you have that just, you know, look at me.
I think it's the same, the same thing. Like, the roots of hip-hop and the roots of punk rock are, like, having nothing and trying to go say something, you know? Like, you don't need instruments to be a rapper. You don't need to be great at instruments to be a punk fan, you know?
And of course there was, I mean, we can't forget, like, you know, Run DMC and LL Cool J, you know, Rock the Bells and King of Rock and, you know, everybody doing, you know, they were sampling guitars, but, you know, bringing in musicians, actual rock guitar players and drums.
And tracks. That's the thing, too, is a lot of, like, drum tracks and getting the loops right and playing along with the loops. That was all cool building blocks for the way that sound came together, but also, like, it was easy enough and not complicated enough for the time to, like, hear what they're doing.
Yeah.
That guy just dropped a record, and those drums are from this Aerosmith song.
Yeah.
He's going to loop that up, and then someone's going to play guitar on it. I'm going to rap on that. You know, like, I feel like it's very complicated now. Everything's computers, and you don't really know where everything's coming from. But when it was first starting to happen, the production was still small enough to where it's like, you see where everything's coming from, and the math just makes perfect sense in your head, for me anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Let me put out a call also to our listeners. If you've had experience with, maybe you're not even a musician who's like tried to form bands, but you're just a music fan who never wanted to conform to any of the gender boundary or genre boundaries of music, and you like what you like, and you don't care who else likes it.
Yeah.
Give us a call, 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Sam, I'm curious to get your take on not a lot of especially when it comes to metal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you wanted to shred, you know, on guitar as a girl. Who did you look to? I mean, were there particular bands? I mean, I know people brought out like Lita Ford or L7 and other, you know, female kind of more metal.
Mm-hmm.
Who were some role models that you looked at as far as actual just lead guitar shredding?
I don't even know, to be honest. I feel like I've thought about this, and I don't, you know, people talk about Lita Ford and those musicians from the 70s and 80s, and I just didn't ever really listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew they existed, at least. So it's like, well, if they can do it, I can do it, too. I just feel like I was able to play with some local bands and see them and was inspired by that. Yeah.
Are there shows that you remember that going and seeing performers and just going, you know, either we're a local or national act, just kind of going, yeah, that's the way I'd do it if I was on stage?
Not that I can think of right now, but I'll keep thinking about
it. Yeah, if you think of something, let us know. Yeah. And Steph, what about you? I mean, obviously, you know, you go to a lot of shows and you sit back and you see something and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I could do that.
I think there was a lot of that. Going to shows in basements, seeing people who are innovating what they're doing. I saw Brainiac in the Entry forever ago, and I'd never seen a band where the singer had one of those little tiny keyboards, and it was just freaking out. It just looked like the music sounded really good, and this was like a kind of a hallmark of like basements and little shows growing up, and the stuff that grabbed me and made me want to come to it. Is the music sounded really good and so loud, and when you looked around at anybody in the room, they were just reacting to what the band was doing. If the band on stage is freaking out and dancing, everybody in the crowd is freaking out and dancing. And like seeing that for the first time, being on the side of a stage and watching the crowd yell the lyrics at the band, those are like the moments and the things like that that like kind of caught me into this whole thing. And like, I want people to shout my lyrics at me.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's not about making dream pop and it's not about making things that people want to nod along to. I saw this band get a bunch of people to shout right at their faces.
Yeah.
And they're all shouting the same thing together. Like, to me, that was that stuff. So,
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. I go ahead.
No problem. Hey, well, we also had a person who's called us or like left a comment here, and I'll just read it for you guys and have you react.
Sure.
Pat from Deephaven says, I'm a grandma and I have biracial kids and multiracial children. I would encourage parents to let their kids try everything. Even the quiet kids who aren't always going to say exactly what they want. You have to be attuned to that. Sound like good advice to you, Sam?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you shouldn't ever let any part of your identity stop you from doing something. Other people are going to try, and you shouldn't, you know, you just got to find people that are going to support you and do that and just keep doing it.
Super real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have a caller also on the line. Let's go to Bobby in St. Cloud. Bobby, what's your question or comment for us today?
Hi. I work as a volunteer DJ at a alternative radio station here in St. Cloud. It's KVSC 88.1. Okay. We operate out of St. Cloud State University, but I heard your conversation this morning and it seemed really apt. I'm actually going to be on the air later today, but one of the things that I have gotten a lot of gratification from is seeking out more music by female artists, and especially like there's a lot of great like all female bands around lately, and a lot of, I feel like, what gets played on alternative stations featuring female artists relies on this kind of like just singer-songwriter light, like ballady stuff.
Sure.
And there's a lot more variety out there if you just like put a little bit more effort into finding it, like punkier stuff and harder rocking stuff and just various genres. And I remember last year on International Women's Day, there were a few of our DJs who played their whole 3-hour show featuring all female artists. Yeah. And it's just really fun to see all of the variety that you can get in there.
Well, Bobby, thanks very much for the call. And Sam, I know that's one of the things that I'm sure is a top of mind with She Rock is, it's like, look, if you want to do singer-songwriter, cool. You want to just, you know, get some to do a noise rock, you know, do it.
Yeah.
Do you find that's like kind of freeing for some of the young women who participate? Just like, I can do anything I want?
I think so. I was always amazed when I started poking my head into hardcore music that it was white dudes, because it's like such an angry form of music. And I'm like, okay, you're an individual, you have your own feelings, but like, you're a white dude, like, what do you have to be mad about? Like,
there's plenty to be mad about for everyone.
Yeah.
But I definitely feel like the bro culture in hardcore.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think like it's so encouraging to just be like, just yell, just try it. Just be mad or be whatever you feel and put that into music. And it's really, yeah, I think it's really encouraging. It's really powerful. And I think it's something the world needs to hear.
Right. Well, speaking of, let's play a little bit more music. Another of our, this is going to feature actually one of our guests here. This is a song from POS. Let's play a little bit of Lanes, and then we'll talk about it afterwards. Every second, every sight I've ever seen is just so far gone. Yeah, I've been doing my own thing so long. Or is it, I've been in my own way so long. Yeah, I've been up and over, she can be my only way. Only chance left, put the pressure on. All right, that is a little clip of Lanes from POS. P.S., talk a little bit about that song. I mean, you have one thing I've just been listening to your stuff. You have I really like how you can tell you've got that a bit of the punk aggression with your rhyming style.
Yeah,
talk a little bit about that.
That came super natural to me. Like I said, the stuff that drew me into making music was the super energetic stuff, the everybody shouting together kind of stuff. And then when I started rapping, it was very much because I could do it by myself. So in order to do that. I learned about sampling from some friends and learned about how beats were made, and then I just wanted to incorporate little pieces of the stuff I always listened to. My first record, I spent a lot of time sampling bands I didn't think anybody would know about, except for people that listened to those bands, so it was just like kind of a nod to the people that heard it, you know? But I really wanted, if I was going to rap, I still wanted it to have the same kind of energy, and I just kind of taught myself how to make music in the that kind of aggressive way. So it's taken me years to make something even as moderately pretty as the song you just heard.
Yeah.
It's about rapping, but it's about taking the energy and forward momentum of rock for me. It just puts more energy in it.
And here's what I'm curious about too. I mean, you talk about going from that being in a band to doing hip hop and doing stuff that you can do by yourself, and you can record tracks and you can sample. I'm wondering if you feel like there's any, what kind of impact that has on, you know, like a musician's ability to collectively create music.
Yeah.
Are we in a situation now? And again, I'm an old head. I had to, you know, I didn't have a little four track even, mm-hmm. or, you know, all the devices I have now. Like I'm using GarageBand and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But back then, GarageBand was actually, you're a band in a garage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm just curious if you think that maybe some musicians these days are losing a little bit of that ability to come together and create.
I think that it's just all the reasons why it's so easy to make music. You see a lot of people who never had a chance to make music or play an instrument get a synthesizer or get a laptop, and all of a sudden they can really use, you know, visual skills to put notes in the right place and learn about music that way, which, you know, is frustrating. Sort of, but it's also like everybody gets a chance, and maybe you don't need to be in a band, and maybe you don't need to learn how to play guitar. If you can sing, you can just kind of get some software and learn how to put your backing tracks together. That guy that was talking about the singer-songwriter thing, I feel like you're seeing a lot more women and a lot of people who are maybe new or just getting into music, yeah. able to like make bigger steps on their own, but you aren't in a band and you're not with your friends until you're kind of further along, which is, you know, blessing and curse.
Yeah, sure. Well, Sam, I mean, in with the rock camps, do you find that being an issue? Like having girls play together and come together and like, because a band is like a relationship with a couple other people.
Yeah.
And sometimes the best bands really don't get along with each other.
Yeah.
Is that something that you have to talk about in the organization?
Absolutely. I think that's like, yes, we do music, but a big chunk of what we do is all these other things about teaching collaboration and teaching how to work with each other. I think especially women are pitted against each other. It's like, nope, there can only be one woman at the top of really any industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're all about like tearing down those stereotypes and saying, no, we're going to work together and things are going to be better when it's all of our voices heard collectively. So we have rules at our camps where you have to write the songs together. It can't be one person's song. It's not just the singer. It's not just the guitar player. It's everyone working together. And for me personally, that's really impacted how I've written too. And all of my bands have always been really collaborative. And I think that's cool. People in my band think of things I would have never thought of, and
yeah.
it makes
things
better.
Yeah,
it is very cool.
Yeah, and I just wonder, you know, again, with in the girls in the program, do they know each other before they come in? Are they already friends, or they're just meeting together for the first time?
Usually they are meeting for the first time. So some of them know each other. They've come for a couple of years, or they might come with friends. But we really try to put them into new friend groups and, you know, encourage them to meet new people. So.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Well, we've got another caller on the line that we're going to go to. This is Blake from Anoka. Blake, welcome to the show. And what's your comment or question?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So I just kind of wanted to hear what all you had as input on. I'm in three local bands here in the Twin Cities, and I play more on the extreme end, kind of beyond what you guys are talking about, you know, black metal, death metal, that
yes.
sort of stuff.
Yes.
And I don't know how familiar any of you are with kind of when you get to that point, but I know globally speaking with those genres, there's a lot of involvement action. Don't get me wrong, it's still white male dominated like a lot of genres of music are like we're talking about, but there's definitely a lot of different races, different genders kind of all over the metal spectrum on
yeah.
the extreme end.
Very true.
But looking at a lot more like what you guys are talking about, you know, it's not necessarily mainstream, but kind of more on the accepted, more frontal end of everything.
Yeah. That's right.
I noticed looking at that, there definitely is a lot less different races and genders going on than there is with the extreme end. So what is it that makes it more intimidating for those groups to get involved on the more popular end of it than on the extreme end?
Thanks, Blake, for that comment. Steph, you had a visceral reaction to that. What vibed with you on what Blake had to say?
It's just, it's super true. It's like the top level of black metal appears to be incredibly racist. And then when you slide right past that top level, you find, you know, just amazing, virtuosic performers of all races and genders, just like anything. Anytime you do like this, that guy was very right. When you do a deep dive into anything, you're going to find all of the people, especially like little extremes and little scenes.
Yeah.
Pull the weirdos out of everything to go get into the weird little scene.
Yeah.
You know, like I work with modular synthesizers, which is a weird little boutique corner of the synth scene.
Yeah.
But there's more women doing that than I've seen playing just normal synthesizers out in the world. When you get into like the weird little boutique corners of things, you typically find like the people who are maybe shy of the mainstream.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are there, that reminds me too, there's so many like subgenres now of music.
Yeah.
Is that one of them, like weird boutique modular synthesizer music? Is there like, if you want to look that up, I mean, you could find
if
it.
There's a really great book that just came out called Patch and Tweak. And there are just as many interviews with female modular musicians as there are men in it, which was noteworthy just as I was flipping through it. It wasn't like held out to be that way. I was just reading about this, you know, reading about the scene that I'm kind of into and tinkering with and dabbling at, and seeing that it is very diverse and very kind of open. And that is, I think that's always been true. You know, you, even as a young punk rocker, you would find tons of women punk rockers or maybe one or two other black guys, but yeah, off in the extremes.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of punk rock and women, I want to go to, we're going to play a little bit more music and we're going to talk a little bit about it afterwards. We've got a song in from Slater Kenny. We're going to play a little Slater Kenny because we would be remiss if we did not play any. So let's take a listen and then we're going to talk a little bit about it after we're, this clip. That's from the song A New Wave by Slater Kinney. And for me, I just love like the very raw, just drums, bass, guitar.
No bass.
And up front.
Sorry.
Oh, they're not doing any bass?
Nah, it's two guitar players.
I thought I heard bass in that.
That's what I was thinking.
In that recording? Wow. Well, then they're maybe just like a weird five string or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like that stripped down approach. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, just reactions from you guys. When you hear Slater Kinney, what do you think of?
I think of all of the Riot Girl bands I listened to in middle of high school.
Mm-hmm.
Bratmobile, Bikini Kill, and, you know, just I just think of that era and that sound. And there are so many, I feel like Slater Kinney especially kind of really has that sound down.
Yeah.
Where it is really simple and stripped back, but it's powerful where it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I've been thinking, like, one of the bands that I saw in high school that really showed me that I could do this was the local band Kitten Forever.
Yeah.
And it just showed that vibe of just like, we're going to keep it simple and we're just going to rock out and this is who we are. And it's really cool.
I think that, you know, from my experience of punk was always it was a return to like rock. It was like you had like rockabilly bands,
yep.
Cramps, X, yep. they were going back to the basic, almost like Chuck Berry-ish type of
exactly
rock, because at the time, popular rock music had gotten really bloated and stadium, you know, bands, the Eagles and even Zeppelin got to be just like totally almost like a cartoon.
Over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I still love those bands and everything, but it's like I could see that it fueled this reaction where people just decided, you know what, let's just get back to basics.
Yeah.
And the punks were the ones who did that.
You can't take you can't take yourself so seriously all the time. Not everything is the most important thing in the world. We could just, like, especially in that rockabilly vibe where everybody just took the rock and roll and turned it up and played a little bit faster.
Yeah. Do we have some, I think we may have even some Kitten Forever in our queue here. Let's play a little Kitten Forever because I personally have not heard Kitten Forever. Oh, so I'm going to learn a little bit here today. Let's hear a bit. That is Kitten Forever playing Famous Friends. It, you know, let's get a little bit meta here on as far as looking at the industry and why do we still have these confining barriers to or pockets where it seems like you have to fit in if you're according to your gender, your how you identify or your racial background. Is this still a matter where that's where the money is? You can put somebody in somewhere, plug them into a formula, and then start bringing in tons of cash? Is that what we're talking about?
I think so. And I think that's why, like, when you go deep into the DIY and the basement shows and that sort of thing, you see more diversity.
More diversity and more just, like, raw people feeling it, you know? I know all kinds of people who are really good at singing and don't have any clue how to write songs and don't really want to write songs. They would love to go to LA and have somebody hand them songs to sing, you know? And then there are other people I know that are going to figure out exactly how to write songs if it takes them 10 years and sit and scrape and get arty and get weird. And there's not a better or worse, but that whole spectrum's there. I feel like genres and labels are always going to be, you know, where the money is.
Yeah.
It's the easier to be like, that's that kind of thing. I'm going to sell it to these people who like that kind of thing than to be like, I don't know what this is. Maybe this will work.
Sure. But also on the other hand, don't we have, I mean, the other thing, the other side of technology, I'm not a Luddite because it's so easier now to record. The technology is much more accessible. You can produce your own record for pennies, you know, compared to, you know, doing, I was in a band in the 2000s, we put out it was a metal band. We did a full length CD, and it cost about $10,000 to do.
Yeah. A lot of tape,
you know. A lot of 2-inch tape, right? Yeah. Now you can go and you can, you know, whether it's GarageBand or whatever else, and you can publish. That's the other big thing, right? I mean, is that something that you talk about in She Rock? That hey, it's like you not only we're doing this for all kinds of good reasons, but you can also, if you want to, go and put this out there. Here's how you do it.
Yeah. I think we really take that DIY ethos of like, do it yourself, figure it out. We talk about recording at a lot of our programs too, because on the recording and producing and engineering side of things, there's also not a lot of women. So encouraging more of that
more and
too.
More.
Yeah, yep. There is. I think it's just way easier now to be an independent musician, especially in Minneapolis. Like, we're just so supportive of that. Like, you can go and play an amazing show at an amazing venue and have a killer time.
Yeah.
What about you, Steph? I mean, looking at the accessibility of the technology and the means to distribute your art.
Yeah.
Is it getting better now?
I mean, it's been better for a while. I think that the fact that anybody can record songs for not very much money, you can tell somebody to buy a laptop and a program and a couple devices, and you can make your own record over and over and over again for what it would have cost to record a couple demos when I was in high school. So that's cool. But when you got all these songs piled up and you just put them on SoundCloud or whatever, do you want to take it further than that?
Yeah,
because
sure.
You have to figure out what you're going to do. Yeah. Nobody's going to go just find your SoundCloud and listen to it. You need to figure out some way to tell people you have a SoundCloud and why they should listen to it.
Well, there's social media as well.
That
would be a whole other show, but we're gonna leave it at that because I want to play a little music as we go out, of course. But before we do, I want to thank my guest, Steph Alexander, also known as POS. He's also a member of the Doomtree Collective. You may have heard of those folks.
Yeah.
And Sam Stallman, she's the co-executive director of She Rock. We're going to play out with a little bit of music from a band called Death. These were young African-American guys from Detroit in the early 70s. They were doing punk rock before most folks knew what punk would even
even they
is.
Knew that it was punk rock.
That's right. This is a song called Politicians in My Eyes on the current. NPR News.
Support comes from Blacklock Photography Galleries, celebrating Craig Blacklock's new book, St. Croix and Nemecogon Rivers, The Enduring Gift. Three editions and holiday gift inscriptions available online at stcroixphotography.com.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.